From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
While media in the U.S. remains focused on the fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic, the political wrestling in the aftermath of it, and, by the way, this year's presidential election, around the world, the rest of humanity continues to go about its business. That's true in the Russian Federation. This past Thursday, Maria Zakharova, the spokesperson for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, held a press conference and discussed what's going on in the world from Moscow's point of view. We bring you as much of that press conference as time allows.
Good afternoon, colleagues. We begin our briefing still in a remote format, and we begin with the current situation about the coronavirus. It is still tense. The total number of infection cases since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic as of 27th of August exceeded 24 million people. I reiterate, it is about the global situation. There is various trends of infection cases, and countries have issued lifting decisions. Last week, the Director General of the World Health Organization emphasized that the fight against pandemic should be a collective cause, and the only way out of it is to go out together. The main vector of activity of national governments of the most countries is to consolidate positive results in fighting the pandemic. Great effort is made to additionally train medical personnel to treat and diagnose COVID-19 and also to implement efficient disease prevention measures. The main focus now is to produce safe and efficient vaccines, develop these, and to hold preclinical and clinical tests, which are held in a number of countries, Russia included, in order to mitigate negative economic repercussions. And our country is committed to further international cooperation in this dimension, and that's something we notified the countries of stay through our foreign missions. We continue working to providing assistance to returning our people back home. We can currently call these flights not evacuation flights, but rather target flights. They are still in demand now, 5 months later, after we launched the relevant algorithm. Last week, over 4,000 people used it, and the total number of returnees exceeded 290,000 people. By way of reminder, there is a number of destinations for regular connections, but these flights are more than in demand, and figures speak for themselves. Until the 1st of September, a number of flights is planned, including from Israel, India, Goa, Alicante, Barcelona of Spain, Verona and Rome of Italy, Cyprus, UAE, Republic of Korea, Paris, Nice of France and Japan, and a long-expected evacuation flight from the PRC is being finalized. Foreign nationals still face restrictions to enter the Russian Federation, as foreseen by the decree of the government of the Russian Federation, dated 16th of March, number 635. And we reiterate that some categories of foreigners, provided they have relevant documented evidence based on the decree, don't have any restrictions to enter Russia. Recently, the relevant decree of the government of the Russian Federation came into force, and it allows foreign athletes and trainers to enter Russia using working or humanitarian visa, cultural rather visa. This is to simplify country entry for those who are taking part in various competitions and national leagues. As we approach the new school year, the Emergency Operations Center of the Government of the Russian Federation, led by Vice Premier Golikova, is working on adopting an algorithm for foreign students of Russian universities to return to Russia. It is more than relevant, as we understand in contacting our our foreign partners. Now about our humanitarian assistance to foreign partners, that's something we regularly inform you on. The assistance to Peru in order to fight the coronavirus infection, in accordance with the request of the government of Peru to Russia to help in fighting the to provide humanitarian assistance in fighting the coronavirus infection. On the 19th of August, the special flight of Nordwind delivered to Lima about 500 test kits and reagents for them. The Ministry of Industry and Trade of Russia, taking into account production capacities of Russian enterprises, is negotiating the issue of additional deliveries of such products to Peru. This is illustrative of true partnership between Russia and Peru based on mutual respect and mutual assistance, close ties of friendship, solidarity between our countries, based on the background of considerable experience of responding to emergencies together. Symbolically, this year, on the 18th of July, both countries celebrated the Day of Russian-Peruvian Solidarity, the 5th anniversary of Moscow helping the survivors of a major earthquake in Peru. We are positive. Bilateral partnering relations will be further developing to the benefit of the Russian and Peruvian people. Additionally, the same flight in response to a request from the President of the Andean Parliament to the Russian authorities in assisting them in fighting the coronavirus outbreak. 200 test kits were, and reagents for them were supplied by the Federation Council of the Federal Assembly of the Russian Federation for the Indian Parliament. Amidst difficult times around the world due to the fight of the coronavirus pandemic, Russia is ready to unite efforts with other countries. Now turning to the schedule. On the 1st of September, our minister is to hold a traditional meeting with first-year students and the faculty of MGIMO of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia, as well as the Diplomatic Academy, as a part of the celebration of the Day of Knowledge. Sergei Lavrov is to speak on topical issues of the international agenda and to answer questions of students in an online format. This will be a face-to-face meeting, I reiterate. But due to prevention measures to prevent the spread of COVID-19, the number of participants will be limited, but the MFA website and also social media of the MFA will stream live. On the 4th of September, presided by the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russia, a full-fledged meeting of the heads of foreign policy departments of BRICS countries will be held in the format of video conference. They are going to exchange opinions on the topical issues of the international agenda, including on the topic of regional conflicts, country new threats and challenges, engagement of the country of the five on multilateral platforms, specifically on the margins of the soon-to-be-open 75th anniversary session of the UN General Assembly. It is intended to discuss the pentalateral engagement during the Russia's presidency in BRICS in three main areas: policy, security, economy, finances, cultural ties. There will be a traditional meeting of Sherpas and Sue Sherpas of BRICS before the ministers confirm. Now turning to the international agenda, we respond to media questions almost continuously, 24/7. There was a wide coverage of the Belarusian developments. We have recently published the interview of the Russian President Vladimir Putin to Sergei Brilov, international journalist. He covered the topic of Belarus very widely. In this context, at this stage, there is not much to add. As we receive additional questions, we will issue additional comments too. But let me refer now to a statement made by Secretary of State Pompeo about the intention to build intermediate and smaller range forces to restrain Russian aggression. That was addressed to the Republican National Convention. Maybe that is why he chose this tone of speech. He praised as an American achievement inter alia withdrawal of Washington from, as he was put it, harmful INF treaty in order for the United States to be able to build missiles to, I quote, deter Russian aggression, unquote. We still believe that the United States have made a significant mistake by instead of making an achievement when they withdrew unilaterally from the treaty. Although the INF treaty was not perfect in the modern conditions, undoubtedly it helped to ensure prediction and restraint in missile nuclear dimension. As we explained many times, the deployment of U.S. ground-based INF in various regions of the world will become will pose great risks in destabilizing international regional security. This will trigger a new spiral of arms race with unpredictable consequences. Certainly, additional missile risks for the territory of Russia will entail immediate response on our side. We are sure that in this context, the only reasonable and justified measure would be to jointly look for a mutually acceptable settlement of the current situation using political diplomatic methods. Russia is open to equitable, positive effort to restore trust, consolidate international security and strategic stability. We are looking forward to similar interests and responsibility of the U.S. As to another propaganda point about the so-called Russian aggression, it is yet another attempt to fully distort facts, to give allusions to U.S. and international communities, to distract the global arena from distracted efforts of the United States. We also noted a traditional statement made by the European Commission on the occasion of the so-called Day of so-called European Day of Remembrance for victims of totalitarian and authoritarian regimes. We must know that Brussels continues following the short-sighted policy of falsifying and rewriting European history. The European Commission again reproduces a revisionist point that it was the Germany-USSR non-aggression pact signed on August 23, 1939, which plunged Europe into darkness, as they put it. However, as is normal for such statements, not a word is said about invasive and totally misanthropic plans of the Nazi regime and also the decisive role of the Soviet Union in defeating fascism. In this context, we would like to remind those who enjoy historical speculation of the fact that Europe started plunging into darkness not on the 23rd of August 1939, but way before that, when the Western capitals decided to pacify an aggressive country. And this policy culminated in the signing, or rather what we refer to as 1938 Munich betrayal, full-fledged discussion of these historical events were given by the President of the Russian Federation in his article, 75th anniversary of the Great Victory, Shared Responsibility to History and Our Future. We quoted from this article many times, and we suggest that those who would like to discuss this issue read it again. The attempts of the European Commission to draw parallels between the USSR and the Nazi Germany contradict everything, logic, morals, and primarily the decisions of the Nuremberg Tribunal. By promoting revisionist and pseudo-historical concepts in order to serve volatile political interests, Brussels plays with fire. Such frivolous treatment or interpretation or distortion of historical facts leads to some sort of tolerance of blatant propaganda of Nazi ideas in some EU member states, which is an obvious fact. It is certainly threatening fundamental principles of democracy and human rights and insults the memories of millions of victims of World War II and those who sacrificed their lives to liberate Europe from German Nazism. I would like also to comment inform you that on the 30th of August, the memorandum between the government of the Russian Federation and the government of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia on facilitating the visa issuing procedure for both country citizens signed in Riyadh on the 14th of October 2019 becomes effective. According to the memorandum, citizens of the Russian Federation and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia are able to receive multiple entry tourist visas valid up to 6 months, multiple entry private visas up to 1 year, and also multiple entry visas for businesses cultural purposes for up to 5 years. Multiple entry visas are issued to citizens of both parties to stay on the territory of our country not longer than 90 days within 180 days. Another topic related to pseudo-democratic values promoted and implemented in the West on the 20th of August, the American corporation Google blocked Granma accounts and Redonda International, based on ambiguous claim that they violate the U.S. Export Reputation Act. They found an excuse. The corporation, in a typical way, did not deem it necessary to provide any exhaustive or any possible explanations. Although these unscrupulous blocking is restrictive in its fashion in violation of universal democratic principles by limiting the freedom of information access and its distribution. It was done deliberately, and the only reason that we have heard is a reference to some norms for the corporation to impose restrictions on transmission, on transfer of applications to states suspected by the U.S. U.S. embargo, subjected to U.S. embargo. Those who take these decisions, you are developing serious documents which aim to stop the spread of xenophobia, racism, new forms and restoration of Nazism, fascism. You always refer to the freedom of speech. You call this sacrosanct. You say that this cannot be forgotten when developing counter-terrorism conventions or resolutions. You set the freedom of speech at the very top. What kind of experts, what kind of blocking of Cuban publishing houses and news media?
Do you think we do not know your genuine rationale behind these actions? Don't you think we don't understand that this is exactly the kind of censorship that you fight against in other countries? You do it yourselves. It is clear that it does not stand any criticism or any sane assessment. This is the extraterritorial application of U.S. legislation, and in this case, it can clearly be qualified as censorship in the internet, and it is at odds with existing UN conventions, and it is totally unacceptable. Yet, is it the only example of anti-democratic media regulation by the US? Not at all. In September 2019, Cuban accounts were already blocked by Twitter network. In June 2020, upon a far-fetched pretext of political propaganda, Twitter deleted massively accounts from Russia, China, and Turkey. In July, Google Corporation, without any warning, blocked an official account of Царьград TV channel on YouTube and the related channels Царьград News and Double-Headed Eagle, also denying them access to mailing, cloud, and other services. It is clear that we see political pressure by American political establishment. It is gaining momentum. And IT corporations Google, Facebook, Twitter are getting involved in it. There is an ongoing campaign against unwanted media presented in social networks, in the internet, and if there is an additional alternative viewpoint, we see that Washington tries to clear it up, because apparently they feel a threat to the information monopoly of the Western news mainstream on the international broadcasting. We believe that the actions of American IT companies companies, including recent decisions of Google, to be a flagrant crackdown on the freedom of speech and opinion. We urge leadership of the companies not to compromise democratic values for the sake of political situation and to review their policy in order to comply with fundamental international legal framework. They can tell us about how these decisions are taken and what pressure your companies experience, how you make a decision to block news channels' accounts. We expect that specialized international institutions and human rights advocates will respond and give an assessment to the current situation. On the 20th of August, the Croatian city of Opatija held an opening ceremony to the memorial of Jesenin. The ceremony was attended by Russian ambassador, and the bust was granted by the Russian embassy as a gift to the citizens of the city of Opatija, which enjoys huge popularity among tourists, including from Russia, and it is encouraging that the initiative to honor the memory of prominent citizens and persons of culture and history enjoys support from the locals. It helps solidify people-to-people contacts. We thank Croatian partners for great care to rich cultural heritage of Jesenin that knows no national borders. On the 2nd of September, we will celebrate a special important date together with our Vietnamese friends. Vietnam will celebrate the 75th anniversary of its independence. Since mid-19th century, Vietnam had been part of French colonies. During World War II, it was occupied by Japan. And only the victory of the August Revolution on 1945 that was achieved by the Vietnamese people, headed by the legendary Ho Chi Minh, put an end to foreign dominance and heralded the establishment of a new state, the Democratic Republic of Vietnam. However, the freedom and independence has had to be defended with arms for many years, first during the War of Resistance in 1946-1945, and later on as it repelled foreign aggression headed by the U.S. In 1975, this heroic struggle resulted in the unification of the country and the establishment of the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. An important role was played by the Soviet Union. For many years, it had rendered large-scale political and economic assistance to Vietnam. Traditions of friendship and mutually beneficial cooperation laid down back in the day still shape the special nature of our bilateral ties. This year, Russia and Vietnam celebrate the 70th anniversary of diplomatic relations. Our interaction is developing dynamically in the spirit of a comprehensive strategic partnership, building upon rich experience of cooperation accumulated during the previous years. Today, Vietnam is a modern state with vibrant economy. It's an active participant to a number of regional and international associations, and currently it is also a non-permanent UNSC member, and we would like to wish peace, prosperity, and well-being to the people of Vietnam. On the 9th of September, the Young Diplomats Council, together with the government of Tatarstan and the Youth Diplomacy Academy, holds for the first time the Young Diplomats Forum of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. That's the annual platform that brings together young diplomats of Muslim countries. Previously, it was held in an offline mode. The subject of the forum is digitalization and diplomacy, new reality and new possibilities. This is indeed an interesting platform. It enjoys credibility as a meeting point for young professionals that discuss the most pertinent issues of international agenda. The 5th anniversary meeting will be traditionally attended by representatives of Algeria, the UAE, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan and many other OIC countries. Guests of honor will be Deputy the Foreign Minister Mikhail Bogdanov, Special Representative of Foreign Minister on Interaction with Muslim State Organizations, Mr. Shuvalov, Head of Investment Development Agency of the Republic of Tatarstan, Madam Minulina, and many others. Let me highlight that the forum will be held as part of a 2 weeks platform, 100% Tatarstan, from the 30th of August till the 10th of September. It is one-of-a-kind platform for business video content to showcase achievements of the Republic in social and economic area and to promote positive information background and image of the region at both inter-regional and international levels. You can get more detailed information at the website. You'll get the relevant link in the script of our briefing, and you can get more detailed information about the accreditation by the phone that will be mentioned. We got a host of questions. RT, Reuters, they even joined hands. It so happened that they asked the same question to comment on the situation in Bamako. On the 21st of August, Russian ambassador to Bamako, Mr. Gromyko, accepted an invitation by the military leaders that seize control in Mali and met with the leader of the National Committee for the Salvation of the People. The meeting took place in the military base of the city of Kati, close to the capital. They focused during this first contact with the newly proclaimed, self-proclaimed Mali officials on ensuring security of the Russian diplomatic mission and its staff. Having said that, the CNSP president was briefed about our concerns of embassy security problems that was not duly guarded after the developments of August the 18th. The ambassador was assured that the Malian guards and military police will immediately be instructed to take exhaustive measures to protect Russian mission. The ambassador was also briefed about causes that prompted military to oust President Keïta and the government of the Republic of Mali, as well as about first steps of the National Committee for the Salvation of the People to restore order and to streamline the work of the government. Let me also note that the CNSP leadership held similar meetings with ambassadors of other foreign countries, including China and France. A question from RIA news outlet. On the 21st of August, the head of the Government of National Accord, Mr. Sarraj, and President of the House of Representatives announced a ceasefire throughout Libya. What's your take on this? We are convinced that there is no alternative to the political settlement of the Libyan crisis, and we've been constantly advocating a sustainable ceasefire in Libya and an end to a deadly inter-Libyan conflict. Since the NATO intervention in 2011, it has been tearing the country apart. And in this regard, recent statements made by the GNA head and the President of the House of Representatives instill certain optimism and are encouraging. We call on parties to immediately launch inter-Libyan negotiations as part of the mechanism established by the decisions of the Berlin Conference on Libya on the 19th of January and adopted, endorsed by the UNSC Resolution 2510. ABC News and Izvestia media outlets would like us to comment on exchange of detainees. Lately, we've seen regular media reports on preparation of exchange of American citizens, recently sentenced Paul Whelan, four Russian citizens detained in American prisons. As was previously mentioned, mentioned by Russian MFA leadership, all these reports do not correspond to reality. As for Russian citizens, for instance, in the U.S., on the 24th of March, Foreign Minister Lavrov sent a verbal message to State Secretary Pompeo. It calls on the U.S. authorities to free them on humanitarian grounds due to COVID-19 situation, but we have not received any straightforward reply. We urge our American colleagues to deal with this issue, and the sooner the better.
And here I would like to conclude our briefing. See you next time, and the best of health to you.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.